Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you could join us today. Well, something happened yesterday in the grocery store that made me feel like I needed to address a topic that we haven't talked about in a long time. I'm not sure why, because it's, I think it's kind of heavy on a lot of people's hearts. And I know I am very aware of it, and that's autism. It scares me a little bit because I think a little bit about that diagnosis has kind of gotten away with itself. And through the last couple years, I've tried to enlighten myself about it. And like a lot of things like that, there's a lot of discussion, and it's variable. It's, you know, one day you read about it, and they have a really clear idea of what the deal is, and then the next day you read about it, and it's it's kind of out there in floating around with ifs, ands, buts, or maybes. And but it certainly exists, and I've seen it firsthand in a lot of different arenas. I think most of you know that a couple years ago, I got involved with the Good Earth Farm, and I did that on the behest of the owner, who asked me to come and work with the ponies and kids. And I said, oh, I'd love to. Not much of a horse person, but I figured, you know, I can probably do that. I can probably figure out what to, you know, how to handle all that. So I did, and I enjoyed it quite a bit until I had to work with some severely autistic kids. And then I felt that I wasn't trained, to be honest, well enough to deal with the situations that came up. And although it pulled at me to want to do something about it and help, I didn't feel like I was equipped. Then I met a couple ladies who have an organization for autistic children, and I met some teachers who work with kids on the autistic spectrum, they call it. And I was, to be honest, a little bit more confused. So yesterday I'm in the store and I see a situation playing itself out with a mom and a daughter. The daughter appeared to be, I'm going to guess, 6 or 7. And she wouldn't leave this doll or like a whole bunch of girly toys were there. They were in the toy aisle at Walmart, and she wouldn't leave. And mom was doing everything she could to distract her from the toys so that they could walk on through the store. And when mom tried to physically move her, because she could have, it resulted in real overreactions. And I watched that play out, but I also watched the onlookers. And the onlookers were, of course, being very judgmental, as we all tend to be. And I heard one lady say, man, I'd pick that kid up and whomp her right on the butt for behaving like that in a store. And another lady said, me too, you know, I don't know how they tolerate that. When I was young, I would have, you know, and I'm listening to all these different comments. Not one person that I heard understood that there were issues much deeper than poor behavior. I saw it. I realized that it was something that this poor mom probably dealt with on a daily basis and was doing very well. But what I couldn't get past was the comments from the peanut gallery. So it made me do a little bit of research last night and this morning. And I want to talk about autism. And really, the sad part about this is I don't see any real light at the end of the tunnel at this point in time, although there's lots of conversation, there's lots of hypotheses going on. Now there's a lot of talk about immunizations being involved with this. Everything I found has to do with brain activity and your genes and heredity and all kinds of stuff like that. So we're going to peruse through the best article I could find and talk about this. I'm going to bring Shelley in and let her catch up because poor Shelley, you know, I never tell her. Well, sometimes I do, but not very often do I tell her the day before unless I've planned out a couple weeks ahead. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Rainey. I'm pretty good at shooting from the hip.
Yes, I know. Thank God. Well, you know, it's funny because I'll have my mind on a dozen different things, and then I look for things to add to the conversation. And if I don't find anything, then a lot of times I, you know, scratch out everything I had planned because I want the conversation to be not just knowledgeable but interesting. You know, yes. So when this happened yesterday, I thought, I guess this is my sign to tell me it's time for us to talk about this again. Early on, when we first started the show, we talked quite a bit about autism, and I mentioned the magical ponies. And since then, we've had on a couple ladies who also do magical ponies or ponies in the hopes to get autistic kids to connect with, you know, something that is living and something they can relate to and give some love and things like that. And it's very big now. I keep an eye on that. And it there's some places here in South Florida where it's amazing. And now they've moved on to taking adorable, really mini ponies into hospitals with kids with debilitating things that they were born with, cerebral palsy and all kinds of bodily disorders where they're in wheelchairs and things like that. And the ponies are wonderful. And a lot of these ladies that I've made friends with send me pictures of some of their outings, and they're heartwarming. And you can see that there's a major connection. The deal that I saw with autism was it could hold their attention, but because a pony doesn't really interact, the nice part about a pony, though, is it kind of allows you to do almost anything to it. I mean, little girls could paint their big toenails, and they could braid their hair and put princess hats on them, and the pony would just stand there, and, you know, they liked the attention, and the kids liked giving it. So it was a kind of a bonding thing. You know, I brought you over, and you witnessed some of the ponies and everything, and it's it was, and I still believe it is, a step towards helping in this area. But what I see the most is the adjustment of the parents. I've seen some really amazing parents that in my eyes deserve, if not crowns, certainly halos, because they are amazing. And they learn to adjust their own lives, their own home life, their own family, to still be able to support and work with this child with all these issues. Have you had any firsthand relationships or interactions with a severely autistic child?
Yeah, I mean, but this was before it was so commonplace. It was when I was, I think, 17 or 18. I think it must have been 17, and I had babysat for friends of mine. They were adults. It was in a group, a study group that I was going to, and I had met this adult couple, and we became friends. And they were going away, and they needed somebody to babysit for their three kids for 3 days. They were going to be gone for 3 days, and they didn't tell me till the day I got there that one of their children was severely autistic, and he was completely non-communicative. He was the middle child. There was an older boy, and there was a younger girl. And I forget how old he was. The oldest boy, I think, was 11, so he was a little bit of assistance to me. The kid who was autistic, I think, was 8. And but he was if he made a mistake, like he would have to. He was in a special school. If he made a mistake on a piece of paper, and he's writing with a pencil, he would completely lose his mind. He would start screaming, banging his head against the wall. I mean, he would become violent. And they didn't prepare me for this at all. I was only 17 years old. I didn't even know what autism was. I'd never even heard of it. And there was only certain foods he could eat. If you gave him the wrong foods, any kind of sugar would send him into a downward spiral, And so what I had to do is I had to grab him. I had to, like, bear hug him from behind, grab his hand with my hand, turn the pencil around, and make him erase the mistake with his own hand. Because if I tried to do it, he tried to stab me with the pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute he saw the error off the page, it was like a light switch went off. He completely calmed down and continued doing his work. But he didn't know. I mean, he was almost a genius when it came to math. He could do these really complex problems, but then he had zero ability to troubleshoot. If he made a mistake, he didn't know just to turn the pencil around. So he could do really complex mathematics, but then didn't have any common sense that if he made a mistake, turn the pencil around and erase it and keep going. It fried his brain. So that was my first experience with autism. And now I know a young man who's in his 20s who has Asperger's. That's part of the autism spectrum. And Asperger's
right.
is like a functional autism. Usually people with Asperger's are very, very intelligent, but they also lack some communication, interpersonal abilities, things like that. They're usually very rigid with rules. They don't know how to be compromising. You know, if you tell them that, you know, nobody can speak up in class and then somebody raises their hand and tries to talk to the teacher, a kid with Asperger's is going to turn around and yell at the kid and say, "We're not allowed talking out in class." Meanwhile, the kid who's raising their hand, you know, it's like they can't apply rules appropriately. It's, you know, they're too rigid with their lives. So, yeah, I've actually known two people, one with severe autism and somebody right now I know who has Asperger's, who's very functional, by the way, but does have Asperger's.
Mm-hmm. Well, Asperger's is one of the syndromes that they talk about in the article that I found. And like I said, there were some that were, you know, advertisements. That's what you find a lot when you look up, when you get on Google and you look up certain issues, problems, especially when it comes to illnesses or disorders of any kind, you get lots of advertisements from doctors and pharmaceutical companies. So this is just a pure and simple, albeit a little bit convoluted. And some things have changed. I cannot find exactly when this was written. So, but I know from my own information that I've collected over the last year and a half that some of this is old news. Although I don't think it's any later than maybe 2012. This was written. So, but I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's enormous and a lot of it is too many points and gets too convoluted. But I do want to read the simple explanation of autism. They call it a neurodevelopmental disorder characterized by impaired social interaction, verbal and nonverbal communication, and by restricted and repetitive behavior. The diagnostic criteria require that symptoms become apparent before a child is 3 years old. Autism affects information processing in the brain by altering how nerve cells and their synapses connect and organize. How this occurs is not well understood. It is one of the three recognized disorders in the autism spectrum. The other two being Asperger's syndrome, which lacks delays in cognitive development and language, and pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified, commonly abbreviated as PTDNOS. I'm not going to read a lot of those because, my God, that is, you'd walk out of here with your head full of letters that don't mean anything. So I'll try to avoid those abbreviations, which is diagnosed when the full set of criteria for autism or Asperger's syndrome are not met. Autism has a strong genetic basis, although the genetics of autism are complex, and it's unclear whether whether autism is explained more by rare mutations or by rare combinations of common genetic variants. In rare cases, autism is strongly associated with agents that cause birth defects. Controversies surrounding other proposed environmental causes, such as, now, you, Shelley and I believe in a lot of this because we've seen diagnosed young people and older people with issues with these things, heavy metals, pesticides, and vaccines. The vaccine hypotheses are biologically implausible and lacking convincing scientific. That sentence is what makes me believe that this article is not from 2014, because now there is more. The prevalence
there's been a lot of reputable research that has linked vaccines to that. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is definitely a biased article.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if it's biased. I think this was the information that was available like 2 years ago. The prevalence of autism is about 1 to 2 per 1,000 people worldwide, and it occurs about 4 times more often in boys than girls. I found that to be interesting, and I see that to be true. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention report 1.5% of children in the United States, that's 1 in 68, are diagnosed with autism syndrome as of 2014. Well, see, so if they can give me that date, I didn't even notice that number before, and I've read this twice, a 30% increase from 1 in 88 in 2012. So, but we both know that, the heavy metals, the pesticides, we witnessed terrible disorders in people even as old as in their 50s and 60s that were dealing with those kind of issues. And I want to say something here just as a side note. One of the most beneficial things I watched with my own two eyes was infrared sauna use for anybody with issues like toxins, like heavy metals, mercury, pesticides. All of those kind of things can be released. I know it sounds too simple to be true, but I want you to really think about it. Can be released in a far infrared sauna. And you can, if you have a sauna at home and it's not far infrared, you can place a far infrared mechanism in your sauna, in your all-wood sauna, so that it works from the inside out. Keep it simple, because if it works from the inside out, it can push some of those toxins out through your largest organ, which is your skin. So I saw people who had been to dentist, had all their teeth removed, And the teeth that you screw in now, like the implant teeth, and we're struggling with all the issues with that, because that is just getting to the point where it is really really at a place where people would want to use it. But like, say, even 10 years ago, when I'd meet people like that who did that because they thought one of their problems with their bad health was the mercury poisoning from fillings from when they were a kid. Mm-hmm. So the infrared sauna has the ability to help you with those issues, so you don't have to go to such drastic measures. And I, as I'm sitting here now talking about this, I'm thinking to myself, if you have one of those and you have a child who is autistic or has been diagnosed with, let's go with mild autism, this may help. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm not even a therapist of that kind. I just want to tell you that it makes sense to me that if that's going on, this may be of some benefit to you. And a lot of your health clubs and things like that now have far infrared saunas. So mm-hmm. I don't want to get off that. But for pesticides as well, and pesticide poisoning is very, very prevalent here in Florida, very prevalent because of all the bugs we have and people trying to keep their homes bug-free. At some point in time, Shell and I are going to do a show about the vaccinations. It's just so controversial right now. And Renee's Heart to Heart is designed to bring you some, I don't know, some answers maybe, let you open up a forum of discussion in your own family, bring you to a place where you can talk about things that are bothering you and you haven't talked about them before. I don't want to be so controversial on Renee's Heart to Heart that causes any kind of, I don't know, discord or anger amongst all of us, because that's not what I want to do. There's enough of that out there. So, but there will come a time, I think, when more evidence and more information is available so that we can discuss it. Shelley is keeping up with this a lot, and one of her nieces is, like, really, really informed. So it would be a very interesting show, but we need for it to get to a little bit better place before we talk about it, in case anybody's wondering why we haven't before now. It is interesting that it's more often in boys than girls. I find that to be interesting, and I have noticed that as well. Parents usually notice signs in the first 2 years of their child's life. The signs usually develop gradually, but some autistic children first develop more normally and then regress. Early behavioral, cognitive, or speech interventions can help autistic children gain self-care, social, and communication skills, although at this point in time, there's no known cure. There have been reported cases of children who recovered. Not many autistic children live independently after reaching adulthood, though some become successful. An autistic culture has developed, with some individuals seeking a cure and others believing autism should be accepted as a difference and not treated as a disorder. I have mixed emotions about that. How do you feel about that sentence, Shel?
Well, read that again. I'm not sure I followed that. Say that again?
It is an autistic culture has developed, with some individuals seeking a cure and others believing autism should be accepted as a difference and not treated as a disorder.
It's absolutely a disorder because it's – see, this isn't a personality trait. This is a dysfunction of the brain. All right, so now I see what they're getting at, and I completely disagree with that. If there's an autistic culture out there saying that people with autism just act differently, you know, like some people are shy, some people are assertive, that type of thing, this is not a personality trait. This is a dysfunction of the brain, so it's absolutely a disorder. It's a disorder,
but look at it from a different point of view. What if you have a child who's been, I mean, I get a lot of parents who say to me, my child is on the autism spectrum, which means, you know, kind of, sort of, they have some behavioral traits that are related to the autism diagnosis. So,
believe that there's a lot of people that are misdiagnosed. There's a lot of children that are diagnosed as having autism that don't have it. I think there's even more kids that are diagnosed as having ADHD that don't have it, okay, that they're either acting out because of poor diet or some other situation. But I'm talking about true autism. True autism is a dysfunction of the brain. It can be improved upon, but it is, as I have something to read from Dr. Corinne Allen when you're done, and she talks about brain injuries and that kind of stuff, and that there's some common traits and how to treat it. So I do have some recommendations on what people can do to help brain function. It is a true autism, not somebody who has some autistic traits. Okay, I'm talking about the full-blown condition is absolutely a disorder. It is not a personality trait. And you can do brain scans. You can see that the brain is not functioning. It's not lighting up in certain areas. There's an imbalance there. It's a physiological condition. It is not an emotional acting out, so to speak. Okay, so it's not an emotional condition. It's a physiological condition.
Well, and there are some pictures in the article that I brought up, and you know that are exactly what you're talking about, the different parts of the brain that are, like you say, lit up in a scan. In particular scans, you can see that, like what we talked about with the difference in the scans, like a thermography kind of a picture where you can see the heat and you can see the activity in the brain and things like that. They've done that with autism too, and show the places that, like you say, do not have any activity. I guess it's like warmth or something. But I do want to say that they say autism is a highly variable neurodevelopmental disorder that appears during infancy or childhood and generally follows a steady course without remission. Overt symptoms gradually begin after the age of 6 months, become established by 2 or 3 years old, and tend to continue through adulthood, although often in more muted form. It is distinguished not by a single symptom, but by a characteristic triad of symptoms: impairments in social interaction, impairments in communication, and restricted interests and repetitive behavior. Other aspects, such as atypical eating, are also common but are not essential for the diagnosis. Autism's individual symptoms occur in general population and appear not to associate highly without a sharp line separating pathologically severe from common traits. So one of the things I remember in the last century, it's funny that I'm old enough to be able to say that, in the last century, there were some shows on 60 Minutes in the 1990s, and they did documentaries and followed children that had been diagnosed with autism. And I'll never forget it, because I thought to myself, you can almost always think of somebody when you're watching a show like that you've seen various traits in. And I remember they had this absolutely beautiful little boy who, the minute nobody was trying to get him to interact, would sit cross-legged on the floor and rock himself back and forth, fold his arms in front of him. No matter where he was, he could be in the grocery store. And if nobody was trying to get him to interact or keeping what attention span he was able to offer them, he would plop right down, cross his legs, and rock back and forth. And the doctors then felt that this brought some order to his disorder. And I watched that, and I thought to myself, isn't it funny? Because when so many and now that I know that so many of the ways to calm anybody, I mean, if you have a newborn baby, what do when they're fussing?
You rock them.
You wiggle. Christ, I was 50 years old before I quit bouncing back and forth when I heard a baby crying. So and my husband rocks his head when he's worried or has any discomfort. He lays in bed and rocks his head back and forth. And if I hold his head, his feet go.
What a thing about rocking chairs. I mean, people use that to themselves. It just the motion, you know, there's all kinds of things like that. They even sell them for patios. You know, look at those big rocking chairs that have seats on both sides. That particular motion happens to be very soothing to human beings.
Well, and do you remember the Qi machine? The Qi machine that you laid in, and it was pretty fast-paced, like you would do for a really, really upset child. like a beat, you know, bum, 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 like that.
Yeah.
And how it rocked you back and forth. It was in the exercise room, and you laid in it, and it just, it did that to you, and it was supposed to, for all of you out there who understand what I'm talking about, balance your chakras and your chi.
Wow.
And I said, when we first brought it in, I said to Brian, isn't that interesting? Because that's how you calm a baby.
Right.
And he said,
right.
I never thought about that, Renee, but that's true. And I said, so there is some significance to that innate knowledge that you have as a mommy to start rocking, or even if you're not the mommy. I can remember when I was in my last trimester of pregnancy, and if the baby was really fussy, I would stand and rock back and forth on my feet until the baby calmed down in my belly.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot to be said for that, but I felt like that was like a, kind of a healthy mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
That a child that has been diagnosed with all these learning disabilities can go right back to the core and find a place where they're okay and content. You know, our mode of survival is amazing, isn't it?
That's right. That's right.
When you see a child, though, an autistic child, like, exactly. But like the child I watched yesterday, she was a girl, and if mom touched her and tried to pull her away from these toys that just had her totally mesmerized, she wasn't touching anything either. She just screamed bloody murder, like mom was trying to kill her.
Oh, God.
And she didn't really fight back. I didn't watch any, like, turning around and trying to slap at mom for touching her, but she knew instinctively, like I said, I would guess she was between 6 and 7, that the minute she screamed, mom would let go of her. She knew that. You could tell, you know. But I could also tell by the way she was so mesmerized by these dolls and things that there were other issues, you know, a lot different from poor behavior. But what got me angry was all the other side comments, you know, from everybody else walking by and watching them. That's what made me want to do the show today, because of that.
And
but
again,
I do think,
down to what we've talked before, is people making judgments without knowing the whole story, whether it's in writing on Facebook or on some sort of a blog or in the middle of a store. People make judgments on other people without knowing the whole story.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And I think that in the big picture, there's always something that you don't know. Always. I don't care who you are, what the situation is, there's always something that you are not privy to. So certainly a scene like that playing out in a Walmart would be one of them. But I think that, and let me get back to my, losing my page here, individuals occur. Okay. Social deficits distinguish autism and the related autism spectrum disorders from other developmental disorders. Autistic people have social impairments and often lack the intuition about others that many people take for granted. Well, that's an interesting note. Noted autistic Temple Grandin described her inability to understand the social communication of neurotypicals, or people with normal neural development, as leaving her feeling like an anthropologist on Mars. Isn't that who you just talked about, Temple Grandin?
No, Corinne Allen.
Corinne Allen, okay. Unusual social development becomes apparently early in childhood. Autistic infants show less attention to social stimuli, smile and look at others less often, and respond less to their own name. Autistic toddlers differ more strikingly from social norms. For example, they have less eye contact and turn-taking and do not have the ability to use simple movements to express themselves, such as the deficiency to point at things. 3 to 5 year old autistic children are less likely to exhibit social understanding, approach others spontaneously, imitate and respond to emotions, communicate nonverbally, and take turns with others. However, they do form attachments to their primary caregivers. Most autistic children display moderately less attachment security than non-autistic children. Although this difference appears in children with higher mental development or less severe autism, older autistic children and adults perform worse on tests of face and emotion recognition. So let's talk about that a little bit. You know, the look that mom gives you when you know you're not doing something she approves of.
Mm-hmm.
An autistic child wouldn't even notice that.
Right.
Or the tone of a voice, like, Shelly, what are you doing that for? You'd know automatically that you weren't supposed to be doing it.
Right.
Just because of the tone of voice. So this is one of the things that I witnessed with the ponies. The one day that I had several kids that were what they called on the spectrum of autism. And they were, I was able to manipulate them.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to pick them up, put them on a pony. I was able to take them off. I was able to hold their hands and touch the pony and you know, put a cowboy hat on them. Then I had a severely autistic child, and that's what changed my mind, because once I met him, even though it broke my heart, there was none of that. And do you know how this family controlled that boy, who was good-sized and six, but good-sized six-year-old? His older sister, who was 13, held him around the waist the whole time.
Hmm. Wow.
She just kept her arms wrapped around him, and if she let go of him, all hell would break loose.
Aww.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
so
horrible to her. Yep.
Uh-huh. But plus that, you see the needs of these folks when they're going through a struggle like that. You know, we always figure out a way, I guess. But that was hard for me to deal with, because I didn't feel like I was adequately trained or, educated to deal with this little boy. And at one point in time, when he got mad at his sister because she wasn't hanging on him right or something, he kicked the pony. And that was that day I walked out and I said to Nancy, I can't do this, because if that pony had kicked that child back, what would I have done?
Exactly.
Nance said, the pony won't kick him back. And I said, you don't know that. The ponies don't talk to you. You don't know that. I mean, I've had ponies bite me. So I couldn't take that chance.
Right.
And I'm sure that there are people out there. There's a couple ladies, like I said, that we had a couple on the show, and they know what to do, and they know how to keep an eye so that accidents like that don't happen. But I didn't think I was the appropriate person. But it did teach me a lot, that one child. And I have also been in the company of children that are just removed. You know what I mean by that? They're just not there with us, but they don't act out. I haven't seen any outbursts or anything like that, but I'm told by parents that it happens. Hmm?
Yeah, they seem to be distant, like not connecting.
Right. So autistic children suffer from more intense and frequent loneliness compared to non-autistic peers, despite the common belief that autistic children prefer to be alone. Making and maintaining friendship often proves to be difficult for autistic individuals. For them, the quality of friendships, not the number of friends, predicts how lonely they feel. Functional friendships, such as those resulting in invitations to parties, may affect the quality of life more deeply. Now, that's a really sad paragraph for me. There are many anecdotal reports but a few systematic studies of aggression and violence in autistic individuals. The limited data suggests that in children with intellectual disability, autism is associated with aggression, destruction of property, and tantrums. In a 2007 study, interviewed parents of 67 autistic children and reported that about two-thirds of the children had periods of severe tantrums, and about one-third had a history of aggression, with tantrums significantly more common than a non-autistic child. In 2008, Swedish study found that individuals age 15 or older discharged from hospitals with diagnosis of autism, those who committed violent crimes were significantly likely to have other psychopathological conditions such as psychosis. So in other words, they're separating an autistic child that's just been diagnosed with autism, no matter what level, and the ones that have done harm to themselves or others as having other psychological disorders, which, of course, makes sense.
Like one of the things I find interesting about that is that, and this is what confuses me about Western medicine, because it so freely puts labels on things, and then the label becomes what Western medicine does. It doesn't really diagnose. It puts a label on symptoms. So when you look at autism now, that's such a broad description. When I was 17 and I only knew of this one boy that had autism, I mean, it wasn't commonplace like it is now.
Right.
Autism back then meant non-communicative. If a child had autism, they didn't speak. They didn't communicate. They didn't know how to communicate. They couldn't have friends. They couldn't go to a regular school. There was no way of integrating a child with autism because they were non-communicative. This kid did not speak. He could not speak. Or if he did speak, the only time he spoke was when he was sitting in front of the television and he would repeat everything back on the TV show that was being said. So every time a character spoke, he repeated what they said. So he wasn't speaking independently, and he was addicted to it. He had to sit in front of the TV every day for 2 hours, and all he would do was sit there and talk back to the TV. But he couldn't talk back to a human being. If you said something to him, he wouldn't answer you. He didn't know how to. He didn't know how to have a conversation. He was just a tape recorder. But he needed that interaction, even though it was just him basically repeating. Yet, like I said, he was very smart with math, you know. But one day, one of the days I was there, I was taking care of the little girl for a minute, turned around, and he was gone. Next thing I know, I hear the garage door go up, and I hear one of the electric lawn tools. I get out into the front yard, and in the literally like 2 minutes that I lost sight of him, he had taken down two of the hedges with a hedge trimmer. And his brother came out, went over, grabbed the hedge trimmer away from him. Nobody got hurt. But I was devastated. I was like, oh, my God, these people are going to come home and not want to pay me for watching their kids. I mean, nobody got hurt, so I wasn't worried about that anymore. But the parents didn't even care. They laughed. They said he did stuff like that all the time. They didn't even warn me. But they had to keep such a close eye on him because he was very destructive. If he could get a hold of scissors or hammers, he would just start damaging stuff. It was a release for him. He wasn't doing it to be violent. It was just simply a release for this kid. You know, he wouldn't attack a person, but he would destroy property.
Well, and they talk about this in the article, and they talk about how that how that grows with the child. And
but think about the movie Rain Man. Remember the character in the movie Rain Man?
Uh-huh.
All right. Now, he was autistic, and he could not communicate. This was the only type of autistic child I had ever known. And now today, children that can sit down and have a conversation and all that are also being labeled with autism. So I'm not understanding how that particular diagnosis has evolved over the last 30 years. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I think because of all the outside entities, the strength of some of the things that we have evolved with, such as the toxins, we've talked about this so many times. It's all about the fact that we're so smart, our scientists are so smart, that they keep making things and they're stronger and stronger and stronger, and but there's no GPS on them. So when they rid your body of what they're trying to rid your body of, they rid your body of other things, such as antibodies and things like that. So you and I both understand that. A lot of people understand that. I mean, look at chemotherapy and radiation and all the things that go with that. The numbers tell you that they cure more cancer today than they ever have in our lifetimes. Every time I look up all the statistics, it's like overwhelming. And the problem is, though, and they get this now, that along with what they're doing now, these poisons and these bacterias and these all these problems get stronger and develop more. I think that everything that I've read last night and this morning, many autistic children become adults that can manage their lives, but the number is larger for the children who never become self-sufficient.
But there's a lot that can be done. There is a lot. People think that there's no hope for someone with autism or Aldi syndrome or Asperger's or things like this, and that's why I want to talk about Dr. Corinne Allen. So when you're done with the article, I just want to read a quick article from her.
Well, let me just, like I said, this is huge. I'm not reading all of it, but I did want to come down to this brain part. Unlike many other brain disorders, such as Parkinson's, autism does not have a clear unifying mechanism at either the molecular, cellular, or systems level. It is not known whether autism is a few disorders caused by mutations converging on a few common molecular pathways, or is like an intellectual disability, a large set of disorders with diverse mechanisms. Autism appears to result from developmental factors that affect many or all of the functional brain systems and to disturb the timing of brain development more than the final product. Neuroanatomical studies and the associations with teratogens strongly suggest that autism's mechanism includes alteration of brain development soon after conception. This anomaly appears to start a cascade of pathological events in the brain that are significantly influenced by environmental factors. Just after birth, the brains of autistic children tend to grow faster than usual, followed by normal or relatively slower growth in childhood. It is not known whether early overgrowth occurs in all autistic children. It seems to be most prominent in brain areas underlying the development of higher cognitive specialization. Hypotheses for the cellular and molecular bases of pathological early overgrowth include the following. I'm just going to read four of them. An excess of neurons that cause local overconnectivity in key brain regions, disturbed neuronal migration during early gestation, that's probably still when they're in utero, unbalanced excitatory inhibitory networks, have no idea even what that one means, abnormal formation of synapses and dendritic spines. For example, by modulation of the neurologin cell adhesion system, or poorly regulated synthesis of synaptic proteins. So in my lay terms for all of that, it sounds like there's some disconnects when the baby hasn't even been born yet. There's some disconnects that take place, and they believe that these disconnects, if they do ever connect, then there's usually problems with them. Interactions between the immune system and the nervous system begin early during the embryonic stage of life, and successful neurodevelopment depends on balanced immune response. So that's why I think that they go back to our genes, because a lot of the issues that they're talking about right there have to do with your constitution. Even before you're born, you have a constitution. I remember Anna Maria, that was one of her favorite things. She'd have somebody in there that would think that they were in pretty bad shape, and she'd look at their live blood and she'd say, you actually have a good constitution. You just need to change a few things and you'll feel better. And I said to her one day, I said, what do you mean by constitution? I've heard that all my life. And she said, you're in good shape. You have strong red blood cells, enough white blood cells to fight off infection. You're, you know, everything is looking the way we believe it should look, with, you know, like blood cells sticking together. That means you're taking in too much fat or sugar or something along those lines. Or you can even see in a live blood cell, you can see the smoke around your cells. When you look at a close-up, there's actually smoke that you can see in the microscope around your blood cells. And she can even, Anna could even go back 15, 20 years in your blood cells and tell you when you experienced some kind of trauma. I found live blood cell analysis to be one of the most amazing things I've ever been a part of. So. But
doctors talk a lot about genetics and heredity and all that, and although it can influence your health, it does not mean that even if you pick up something hereditarily, it doesn't mean that it has to be your course of health, because now scientists are proving this is not my opinion. There have been studies at like Harvard and major universities is that human beings today have the ability to alter 40% of their DNA. And this is something that's been proven. This isn't like just something that's out there in science fiction, all right? This is something that's been proven through different types of tests, that we have the ability to alter, think about that, 40% of our DNA. That is dramatic. There are certain things that they haven't been able to see us change. But there are people that they've seen, and we talked about this on another show, you know, with split personalities, where in one personality the person has blue eyes and another personality they have brown eyes. They're actually changing their physiology and other things that are as dramatic, where in different personalities they have different blood types. So if you can have somebody, because of how they feel in a particular personality, actually alter their blood type, alter their color of their eyes, alter whether or not they have diabetes or not, this really says a lot about how much our mind plays a role in our health and in how things manifest and move forward and in the function of the brain. Now, there's that movie out now about this woman who gets 100% of her brain, and they said it, you know, at each level she's able to do something more and more and more. I actually want to see that movie. It looked kind of intriguing to me. But the bottom line is that the brain is capable of so much more, and it's almost like medical science keeps diminishing that fact. We have the ability to do more and to correct more, and that's something that Dr. Corinne taps in on. She has had incredible success with helping people with all these different brain disorders because she doesn't look at them as permanent conditions.
Okay, well, read what you've got, because we're down to 6 minutes. So read what you've got there that you want to share with everybody.
Well, the website, and people can go in on her website and research more. She's got a lot of links. She has DVDs out. The website is www.brainadvance, BRAINADVANCE.org. Her name is Dr. Corinne Allen. She's brilliant. She's been doing this research for over 28 years. She lectures. She talks about diet. She talks about glutathione, essential oils. She has all kinds of newsletters, articles, and books. She talks about neurotoxins and toxicity and how that affects the brain. She talks about gluten and dairy-free diets. So she's got all this up on her website. She's made a connection with all these different things and the functioning of the brain, also about water. So she says the brain is 85% water. Optimal brain function depends on water and lots of it. Water is what keeps the brain signals going. When the quality of water is compromised, the signals are short-circuited. What supports DNA, and is the largest single source of energy. The brain has no way to store water, and dehydration comes if all the water lost in a day is not replaced and this deficiency is accumulated. Brain cells need 2 times more energy than other cells in the body. I think that's important for people to realize. If you're feeling foggy and tired and you're starting to get a headache, it's important that you stop and drink water. It's more important than anything else you can do. Not soda, not iced tea, not lemonade. It has to be water. It's the only thing that replenishes the brain. I'm saying that. All right, back to her article. Water supplies energy. Nerve transmission consumes 1/2 of all the brain's energy and nearly 10% of the whole body's energy. When hydrated, you have more energy. When the brain is functioning on full reserve of water, it will function at full capacity, and you'll think better and faster. Brain injury causes inflammation. Brain inflammation can occur from many causes, including head injury, premature birth, lack of oxygen, vaccinations, pesticides, accidents, and various infections. The resulting inflammation can provide dysfunction in the body's ability to detoxify harmful substances. The brain can also exhibit mitochondria that have low energy output and high free radical generation. Often those whose brain challenges like autism and Asperger's, ADD, depression, panic attacks, head injuries drink almost no water each day, only accentuating the problem in the brain functioning. In autistics and others where brain inflammation is high, toxins can more easily cross the blood-brain barrier, flooding the brain with free radicals. So she's a big advocate of high alkaline water, and she does talk about Kangen. I don't want to do a commercial for Kangen, but anybody who has a child with autism, I would highly recommend that they do research Kangen. I have a Kangen machine. My friend has a Kangen machine. And the reason why I want to say that is that the difference between a Kangen water ionizer and all the others out there, it is the only medical-grade machine, and it's the only machine out there that produces what's called a microclustered water. And it gets through that blood-brain barrier and hydrates the blood. A friend of mine, you know her, Paula, actually has gone into a couple of autistic clinics where they have groups of autistic children, expose them to this Kangen high alkaline water, and the behavior across multiple children, not just one kid, changed dramatically. They became calmer. They didn't have temper tantrums. Kids that were having temper tantrums didn't, because it calms the activity in the brain and it makes them feel more at ease. So there is a difference, and I can actually give more information on another show. I was actually thinking maybe we should have Paula on a show because it is such a big issue. And this one specific water, Dr. Corinne Allen is actually an advocate. She's researched all types of water, all right? She's very much against plastic bottled water because they have such high contaminants and leaching of the plastics that they can actually compound the issue with an autistic or an ADHD. She's very much against plastic bottled water. She said you have to do some sort of good filtered water, and she says that the Kangen is the best because it's the only one that's medical grade and that's microclustered. So her whole article in this particular, I'm not going to read the rest of it. Her whole article is about how brain dehydration can actually cause some of these conditions or worsen them. And then if you go to her website, then you see all these other things. She talks about glutathione, and she talks about different types of nutrition. And, you know, she advocates a lot of things we talk about, of taking out the dyes and all the, you know, getting pesticides away from the kid, making sure they're not exposed to toxins and heavy metals. And so it's an excellent website. She's got videos up here that you can watch and then she has all the different brain dysfunctions that she talks about. But she's been doing this research for over 28 years, and she's actually very brilliant about it.
Yeah. Well, and I don't disagree with any of that, but I do have problems with things like Kangen water because it's unaffordable for so many people. So I as much as I believe in it, I know that there's a lot of people out there that can't swing it. So I'm glad that we have other things that we can talk about. Them with journeys like this as well. And
well,
hydration.
A lot of other stuff up on her website, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. But we're out of time. I want to thank everybody, and everybody go out and have a great day today. It looks like there's more rain, but we're not as in as much trouble as they were in up north between Arthur and all the rainstorms yesterday. I have friends in Ithaca, New York, who had their cars crushed by trees. So we're off. Very strange start with weather. So everybody go out and have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow on Renee's Heart to Heart. God bless, and we'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye. Thanks, Shel.
Thanks, Renee. Thanks, everyone. Have a wonderful day.